Chapter 1. The Faith Factor. Epigraph. I believe one of the main ways that we grow in favor is by declaring. It's not enough to just read it. It's not enough to just believe it. You got to speak it out. Your words have creative power. One of the primary ways we release our faith is through our words. There's a divine connection between you declaring God's favor and seeing God's favor manifest in your life. And some of you are doing your best to please the Lord. You're living a holy, consecrated life, but you're not really experiencing God's supernatural favor. And it's simply because you're not declaring it. You've got to give life to your faith by speaking it out. Joel Osteen. If Joel Osteen is anything, he's polished and smooth. A hip, new personification of God talk in America. A fresh, improved version of faith purveyors such as Benny Hinn, Jan Crouch, and Kenneth Copeland. Gone are the comb-overs, blue wigs, and weird intonations. Also gone are the words of Christ. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. No room for talk like that in the inn. What essentially remains is a message of prosperity, a message of health and wealth in the present, a message of happiness trumping holiness, and your best life now obscuring the hope of a new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, as Hinn, as in Benny Hinn, famously remarked, "I'm sick and tired of hearing about streets of gold. I don't need gold in heaven. I gotta have it now." Jesus lived in a mansion. Jesus wore designer clothes, and you should too. Osteen's Compact Center is now the happiest place on earth, or so it seems. What is largely lost in all the hoopla are the multitudes who have fallen from the bright lights of the stadiums into the dark abyss. The baby died. The spouse contracted cancer. Foreclosure looms on the horizon. And the hell of it all is that you are to blame. Negative words and tones, Osteen, created your realities. For Osteen, words are, well, downright magical. In the physical realm, you have to see it to believe it, but God says you have to believe it and then you'll see it. Think about it, exhorts Osteen. Your words go out of your mouth and they come right back into your own ears. If you hear those comments long enough, they will drop down into your spirit, and those words will produce exactly what you're saying. As proof, Osteen invokes the Bible. The Scripture tells us that we are to call the things that are not as if they already were. Well, as the biblically literate well know, Scripture says nothing of the sort. Indeed, the very passage referenced by Joel Osteen clearly communicates that it is the God who gives life, not we, who calls things that are not as though they were. For Osteen, Scripture twisting has become a virtual art form. Whatever the truth, he is bent on demonstrating that the words we speak create the realities we experience. If that takes turning a paralytic from a hero into a heel, well, so be it. In Osteen's version of the story, Jesus encounters a paralytic by the pool of Bethesda just lying around feeling sorry for himself, and in response to the words of Jesus, which were straightforward and simple and posed as a question, the paralytic begins listing all of his excuses. I'm all alone. I don't have anyone to help me. Other people have let me down. Other people always seem to get ahead of me. I don't have a chance in life. With nary a hint of mercy, Osteen continues, is it any wonder that he remained in that condition for 38 years? By way of contrast to the paralytic, Osteen says his sister, Lisa, arose from the ashes of a painful divorce and remarried. Unlike the paralytic, she wasn't going to sit around by the pool for 38 years feeling sorry for herself. Positively or negatively, says Osteen, creative power resides in your words. As such, Osteen cites the story of Abraham and Sarah. The moment God told Sarah she was going to have a child, Sarah, who saw herself as an older, barren woman, began making negative confessions. Thus, says Osteen, God had to change the image Abraham and Sarah had of themselves before he could ever have that child. And how did God do that? He changed their names. He changed the words they were hearing. He changed Sarai to Sarah, which means princess. Every time someone said, hello, Sarah, they were saying, hello, princess. Over time, that changed her self-image. Now she no longer saw herself as an older, barren woman. She began to see herself as a princess. As a result, writes Osteen, she gave birth to a child. Not only does Osteen torture the text, but he also makes a morally reckless application to the present. He tells the story of a friend named Joe, whose wife had 5 miscarriages before something clicked inside of him. He realized his given name was Joseph, meaning God will add. Joe then required everyone to call him Joseph, believing that in doing so, they were speaking faith into his life, and as a result, God would add to him a son. Osteen goes on to say that several months after Joseph began believing his name, his wife became pregnant again. And for the first time in 10 years, she carried the child to full term and gave birth to a healthy baby boy. The moral of the story, concludes Osteen, is that with our words, we can prophesy our future. The implication is hard to miss. Had Joe listened to God speaking to him 10 years earlier, the lives of 5 children would have been spared, and he and his wife would have been spared a world of hurt as well. Not only so, but with millions of Osteen books in print, one can only imagine the numbers of people who must even now be superstitiously fretting over the spiritual implications of, well, their names. From Osteen's perspective, the force of faith is so potent that even the sovereign of the universe is bound by its irrevocable reality. In evidence, Osteen cites the birth of John the Baptist. Zechariah doubted that his wife could give birth to a son. Thus, God rendered him speechless during the entirety of Elizabeth's pregnancy. Why did God take away his speech, asks Osteen? It's because God knew that Zechariah's negative confessions, are you really sure this is going to happen? Do you see how old we are? I just don't think this could be possible, would stop his plan. As such, God had to take away Zechariah's speech. Once again, however, we have entered the spin zone. Not only has Osteen added spin to the biblical text, but he has left out significant portions of the biblical narrative. To begin with, even though Zechariah was startled and was gripped with fear at the presence of an angel, God characterized Zechariah as upright and blameless. Moreover, Gabriel specifically said to Zechariah, your prayer has been hurt. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son. In response, Zechariah asked, "How can I be sure of this?" The angel Gabriel responded by giving him a sign. "You'll be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their proper time." Nowhere in the text is there any indication that God had to take away Zechariah's speech because he knew that Zechariah's negative words would cancel out his plan. On the contrary, if the Bible teaches us anything, it is that God is supreme in his authority and his power. Nebuchadnezzar found that out the hard way. He had come to believe in the sovereignty of his personal rule and command, and therefore God gave him the mind of an animal. He lived with wild donkeys, he ate grass like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven, until he acknowledged that the Most High God is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and sets over them anyone he wishes. As the mighty Nebuchadnezzar acknowledged after being reduced to eating grass like a cow, God's dominion, not Nebuchadnezzar's, is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand and say to him, "What have you done?"